Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favorite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I think this is an exciting opportunity to be able to be involved in a franchise league in this part of the world, in the continent of Europe, in Ireland.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Where do you want to start? Are we starting with the fact that maybe Southampton are going to play in a playoff final? Maybe they're not, even though they're through to it. We don't know what's going to happen here.
Yeah, I suppose that's the place to start. The championship playoff semi-final, second leg between two sides that really hate each other, Jer. Middlesbrough and Southampton.
Did they hate each other before the spying incident?
No, I don't think so.
The spying is newly minted.
Yeah.
I think the spying and Southampton's blatant reaction to the spying is probably what's causing this to carry onto the pitch.
Some Southampton fans showed up in full camouflage gear yesterday.
Amazing. I do love a bit of that, to be fair.
I think Tondo Eckhard, the Southampton manager as well, his reaction hasn't been fantastic, if you want to choose a word. He was interviewed after the first game, the post-match interview, and he had this grin on his face the entire time he was being asked about the spying. It was like the cheeky lad down the back of the class who has been caught and still finds it kind of funny, and the teacher's giving him
he knows it. Yeah, he doesn't think it's all that serious. Yeah, I will say that his interviews are always quite like that. He does have this odd sort of demeanour the least kind of nasty way. It is just a bit, he's a bit different in the way he interacts with the media.
Keep talking now, dig yourself out.
No, but it's just a bit odd. Like, hopefully he doesn't take any personal offence to that, but
he's a bit aloof, like, isn't he?
Yeah, he's different. But that, in this situation, it definitely came across in a bad way, in that he was not really taking this too seriously, when the punishment that Southampton could get can't really get any more serious.
No, the punishment, it feels to me, is way over the top. But this is because Leeds were caught.
Well, so this is the thing, this isn't...
It's actually not... Southampton aren't getting punished for what they're done, really. They're getting punished because this happened before.
Well, yes, that's one side of it. But there's also the side of it that supposedly a lot of different championship clubs have also come to the fore and gotten in contact with Middlesbrough to say that...
Oh, they did the same to us.
Well, we feel as though they may have done similar things, in that they...
Maybe you're just shit.
Yeah, well, look, listen, I it's one of them, right? It is one of them where... Middlesbrough still should have won that tie over the course of the two legs in their own heads. Like, they could have gone and won it. They were there. The game was there for them. They went 1-0 up last night after a couple of minutes, and all they had to do was
see it out,
and they couldn't do that. And that's on them. But at the same time, it's not a great look from Southampton. And I think there was a lot of love towards them. Not love, but like, people were appreciating what they've been doing. They knocked Arsenal out of the cup. They ran City close.
They had a great season.
They ran an outrageous run. He'd come in and taken this kind of unknown quantity, taken this team that should have been doing better than they were and made them as good as they are. And this has sort of tarnished a bit of the goodwill that was towards them. And now we've got a playoff final between two teams that I can't imagine there's a whole lot of appetite for either.
This was probably... the tie that most people would have wanted to see in the final, because they are probably, based on the two legs especially, or the two semifinals especially, I think Southampton and Middlesbrough are probably the two best teams that made it into the playoffs. Hull will have an upfield battle against Southampton if they are playing them. Mm. If they're not, then who knows? But the final now has a large amount of Irish interest as well. John Egan obviously in action for Hull City, and Finnazaz and Ryan Manning was hit and miss last night, I would say. He played well in moments. Defensively, there were still some questions to be asked, especially for the first Middlesbrough goal. But
he's a great asset. He's always
always a danger.
As we know that,
he's more of a danger on the ball than he is positionally, for sure.
What happened with Leeds was, obviously, Leeds admitted that they were spying and they were fined.
Mm.
And after that, they changed the rules because they thought that a fine wasn't significant enough. There was 200 grand, right? And now it's going to be a playing sanction as opposed to a money sanction. And the only playing sanction available to them is a routine 3-0 win for Middlesbrough, which will put Middlesbrough through. Now, Middlesbrough, are they like Denmark winning the Euros in 1992, go on the piss for 3 days, realise that they're actually going to play in the championship final, playoff final, and then play?
Well, Kim Hellberg has said after the game
we're staying around.
He said we've planned for if we were going to win, and we've also planned for
like the
awfully
fans sitting on the pitch.
So yeah,
that's what they should have
said. They're going back. We're not leaving. Yeah, imagine. Oh my God, yeah. But
is it like?
There's also just with Southampton, they've said that essentially this intern that was the guy who was recording them is working alone, and he was just trying to impress us, and he really wanted to do the right thing.
And they found him, and they made him delete the videos at the time, right?
Yeah.
Now, the trouble is he's been seen celebrating with the manager in previous games after goals were scored. So obviously that would suggest he has some access to the manager.
How much of an advantage do you think it
is? That's my question.
To spy on a training session.
Obviously, like, Donegal think it's such an advantage that they built a wall.
They built a wall, but then also send
your boy down up on the tree.
Up trees to go see training sessions. I think the higher up you go, the less advantage it becomes. Like Keith Tracy was saying on Friday last when this story first broke, that it's nothing. Like you prep for every scenario anyway. So I don't know what they were trying to do here or what the advantage they thought they might have gotten. But, I mean, it didn't really help Middlesbrough. If anything, it fired Middlesbrough up for this game even more because they were the better team for a large part of both legs. They just couldn't finish their chances.
Well, yeah, it goes both ways as well, though, in that Southampton now have this siege mentality of nobody wants us to win, you know, where no one really cares. But, like, at the same time, you're like, the goodwill, as I mentioned, is probably gone ever so slightly. But I would say, before we move off, we were kind of chatting there in the office this morning about the whole VAR thing. Like, it's amazing how much you can still enjoy a game of football. And how everyone on the pitch moves on from a decision. There was one stage in the game there, was a handball incident where the referee said, it was like this, it's hit his shoulder. And you see the replay and it's like, it's hit the palm of his hand. So it's blatant. Like, it's a stonewall penalty.
It's
like,
the wrong thing.
And
give me VAR every day of the week for that crap.
25 seconds later, no one cares. It's moved on. It's grand. And Kim Hellberg's not coming out after the game. Tom Decker's not coming out after the game saying it's an absolute disgrace. If we had VAR here, we would have been through it. There's an acceptance of we don't have it and this is the way it is and we move on.
Yeah, there was a short moment of bliss for me after that decision. It was actually that decision. They were just showing the replay, but they had to cut from the replay and the commentary said, and the play continues.
Yeah.
Within 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And everyone had forgotten about it.
Yeah,
10 minutes later.
Yeah, there's another one where Leo Cienza's in and he enters the box and it's like a 1v1 and Dale Fry is standing him up and he quite literally stands him up and it could easily be a penalty. Like he doesn't take him out per se, but it's one of them where if it's in the Premier League, we stop for 2 or 3 minutes and we have a look and we see what's going on and we see if we give a penalty.
Yeah,
and we didn't and we moved on and that was it. Do you know what I mean? And I understand where you're coming from, but as far as, you know, if we want to get the decisions right and all this sort of thing.
I think that they could... The issue is they don't do it fast enough.
They don't do it fast enough, but they're...
And they don't have confidence in their own decisions.
Yeah, but yeah, that's... And they're also not getting the decisions...
Did I see what I saw? Did you see what I see?
Yeah. They're also not getting the decisions right. It's the other thing. All the time. And if you're going to be spending all this time and you're going to be spending all this money and you're going to be doing all this stuff, at the very least, you have to be getting the decisions right 100% of the time.
100% is probably too much, but they made more mistakes this year than the last year.
But
so
if you're going to be making any mistakes, well, then why do it in the first place?
Because he's chasing perfection.
Yeah, and the best things in life are not perfect.
Yeah,
very deep for this time in the morning.
So you're saying don't try.
I'm saying leave it the way it is. Which what was wrong with it in the first place?
Well, Thierry Henry.
Yeah, but these things happen. These things happen. That's obviously egregious, and that is like the degree of how bad it can get. But
over the course of a season, 2 or 3 bad decisions can easily transform an entire club's future. As in, you could get relegated, which is, you know, in Leicester City's case, has been catastrophic for them. And there's just too much to play. I think that the system seems to work in the Europa League and the Champions League, and in the World Cup, it's going to be fine. It's just that England, being England, have managed to screw this up.
That's fine, right? In that a team can get relegated off the back of a decision. You get relegated off the back of a 38-game season. You win the Premier League off the back of a 38-game season. And you get towards the end and it's crunch time and big decisions happen, like what happened at the weekend with West Ham and Arsenal. That could send West Ham down and it could give Arsenal the title, absolutely.
That was the right call, right?
But maybe so, maybe not. That's beside the point to a degree. But it's just that if whether it's right or whether it was wrong, that's not the sole reason why West Ham are going to get relegated or why Arsenal are going to win the league. It's the balance of 38 games. And I think...
Yes, but these are not competing points, I think, but We had the audio from them the other day.
We do,
we?
Yeah. Do you want to hear how decisions are made on VAR? This is the Arsenal
West Ham. This is going to be 14 minutes long here.
No, I cut it down to the main points. So,
for me, there is a foul, potential foul with the arm. His hand is holding his arm down. That's impactful for me. The left arm there is holding, is across the body, is across the head, and he's holding the left arm of Raya there.
Yeah,
which impedes his ability to get to the ball properly.
I agree, it's impactful. It's just everything else that's going on as well. So let's say we're saying that's a foul, then what we're saying about Trossard's actions on the same player, and what we're saying about Declan Rice behind.
So, he still gets the hand to the ball, doesn't he? And he's getting to the ball.
What's your initial opinions as you watch?
I think for me, we're sending for an on-field review to look at the possible foul on the goalkeeper. And then we're looking to look at the other incidents as well. I think that's the best decision in terms of this. The left arm of Pablo comes across Raya.
I'm just going
to
come down.
The left arm of Raya as he goes to win the ball.
Yeah, number 19.
I'm showing you that now. Yeah, but then
I can see the clear holding on him across. Miles.
Yeah, but then I'm just going to show you some obviously other angles on just that incident of players.
I'll flip to the other angle. Then.
You've got Declan Rice and you've got Trossard.
I don't think it's touching that at all. I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
That's nothing. There's a lot of players behind, mate, so that's nothing.
And then if you just want to consider the actions of Declan Rice on Mavropanos at the back.
They debate for quite a bit whether the contact on Raya actually impedes his chances of getting the ball. So it's not as straight cut as was what was made out in terms of like, oh, well, he had his arm on him. He's clearly holding him. The referee, the VAR referee, Darren England, and they discussed in detail whether or not that actually impeded him. So,
I don't think there's much point in spending loads of time talking about that. I mean, clearly his hand on him impedes him from going and collecting the ball. I think the issue is around what's going on everywhere else. What happened first? I know you mentioned it there about that the Raya incident happened before the Mavropanos and Rice wrestling match that was going on behind him. But I don't know, it's just so tedious. And I think, don't get me wrong, it's not an enviable position. It's not a job that I would fancy doing myself. But you've put yourself there and you're in it now, so you better do it right, you know?
Yeah, and then, look, one of these baselines of this conversation is that they're trying to become bigger characters. And I'm not sure about it, but there's a lot of evidence in favour of that argument. You think the wrong decision was arrived at, ultimately?
I don't know if I would say I think the wrong decision was arrived at, but I again, it comes back to what I was saying. There's so much going on in the box there that I think the Trossard and Pablo, and again, we're 4 days on here, but it's that, as you say, that we put ourselves in this position where this is such a big decision and such a big talking point. And like, after the game last night where there's no VAR going on, no one's talking about any of the decisions in as great detail as we're talking about stuff like this. And it is equally as important. Obviously, the Premier League title is a bigger thing than the Championship playoff semi-final. But for those teams, it's the same thing. And when you're putting a product on the television, it holds the same weight when you're watching it. And they're spending more time talking about what's actually happened in the game as opposed to what an official got right or got wrong. But I think the Trossard-Pablo thing, I think Trossard has a bit of there's holding, there's pulling, there's pushing, there's a bit of battling going on, and Pablo ends up not falling into Raya and putting his arm up, but he ends up as close to Raya as he does because Trossard is pushing him there. And I think maybe there's a bit more talk in that, but at the same time,
you want more VAR talk, says Matthew. Ban VAR, but let's talk about it more.
I absolutely hate it.
Okay, well, let's move on to I don't know if our system is okay, there's two big things we need to talk about. One is the AFLW. There's a talk show in Australia where the idea of an Irish team in the AFLW was floated. It kind of seemed to be very left field. No one had heard anything about this up until this point. I think we have the clip, so we play this.
So as a result of the idea that an Irish team can play an Australian game of football, last week I met with the new Consul General of Ireland in Victoria for the first time, Marie-Claire Hughes, and the Irish Ambassador in Canberra, Fiona Flood. And we're discussing this. It has now been discussed at AFL level, and there is a genuine desire to put a 20th team into the AFLW competition when Tasmania comes in of Irish team.
Wow.
So we would have an Irish team. We're not playing in Ireland. It's not going to be a long away trip. They will be based here probably in Melbourne. but an Irish team, or maybe in Sydney, but probably here in Melbourne, we are now, we the collective football world, are looking at integrating an Irish team into the AFLW. Now, at the moment, we have 39 active players, and at the draft last week, we had a player go at pick 3, another one at pick 7, and this is with ones who are just coming over. So imagine if you actively put it together and did it in conjunction with the GAA.
Oh, in conjunction with the GAA is the bit at the end there. It's like, ooh, who would actually own this thing? Well, maybe the GAA would own it.
Would that be? LGFA? Then maybe, yeah. If it's going to take a couple of years integration,
Suddenly there's an incredibly valuable asset that the LGFA have. And I'm like, oh no, we don't need integration anymore.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be a power move and a half, wouldn't it? My God.
So that guy is Eddie Maguire, and he's the former Collingwood president, and that was on a TV show, and it didn't sound like it was something that he had just obviously thought up in the green room, because he had had meetings with he name-checked Marie-Claire Hughes, who's the Consul General of Ireland in Melbourne, and the new Irish ambassador, whose name I actually missed there. But there's a 19th team is Tasmania, right? So there needs to be a 20th team to make it an even number of games, if I'm filling in blanks here.
Mm-hmm. Logically, that would make sense,
yeah.
So I don't know when this might happen.
It'll be a while anyway, because...
Next year?
The Tasmania
is the competition, 2028 is the 19th team.
Yeah.
And he thinks a Melbourne-based Irish team could follow. So by 2030, there'll be an Irish team. An opportunity for good gear.
Great gear. It'll either go really, really well for an LGFA point of view, or really, really badly, I think. Because one thing at the moment, the AFLW is so new. Like, it's so new. A lot of the players that we're seeing in the league at the moment, even Australians, didn't grow up playing. Like, you know, we grew up here playing GAA. They took to it a little bit later, and it's only now across the country that you're seeing... like younger clubs starting off for AFLW. So that's why they rely so much on the Irish talent, because they didn't have that pipeline. But in the next couple of years, you'd be hoping to see that a lot of the rookies that are being signed have grown up playing it, so they won't need like players from Ireland that haven't even grown up playing the sport coming over and not just...
showing them how it's done.
Yeah, absolutely dominating, you know?
Taking our jobs.
Yeah, it's really interesting, like, getting the on-the-ground reaction to all this, because... in Australia, there's a general feeling around the AFL with the men's players that they come in and they have to get up to speed really quickly with the skills and with the kicking and with the fielding. Like, there's definitely a gap in education there. But with the AFLW, since that's still so in its infancy, there was a general feeling that the Irish women were the best players in the league and they were the superstars out there. Like, I was in Melbourne for... a year and a half, you couldn't drive around most of the city without seeing a big billboard of Sarah Rowe somewhere there. Like, she's a genuine, bona fide superstar out there. And it would be similar enough with the other Irish players. They're generally considered, it's the Australian women. They need to get up to the skill level of the Irish players.
Yeah, they've been named on the all-Australian teams multiple times. Like, so they're the standard bearers over there nearly. One thing, if they do, is you'd think they'd put it in Sydney, you know? Coogee probably has enough people over there at the moment just to...
County Coogee
to make their own team. What they're struggling at the moment as well, the Irish players going over, I mean, we saw with Blaheen Mackin, she was able to play the full season with Armagh and then go over and play in Australia, which she has spoken about recently was really tough just mentally. She probably didn't even realise it at the time. But if there is just a cohort of Irish players over there, would we be able to manipulate it in the way that they can stay here and play the championship, miss the pre-season? They're not relying on Australian teammates wondering, like, why are you over there not coming over? So there could be a little bit of an opportunity in that we can get them to stay here for the championship and then they go over and dominate in Australia as well. And the Australians will cull the team after a year or two because it'll be too embarrassing.
Yeah, I wonder... like, there's the concern around this being a complete exodus of the top talent and the LGFA and the best players that we have in this country just going over to play professional sports, which is, you know, when you see the facilities they have versus potentially fighting to play on the third pitch of their club team. It's a really promising opportunity for them. But I wonder, is there an opportunity here for the LGFA to use this as a breeding ground for professional athletes, essentially. Send them over to this AFL team, get proper facilities, get proper training, get to train in professional environments and play in professional environments, and then come back. And the LGFA is just this incredible competition filled with professional athletes at the top level.
Why would they bother coming back, though?
You still always have that draw. Like, if they can build this, if they can build their season around this.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's
the old sod, Matthew. People love their country.
Yeah,
no, people love their county.
Yeah.
I mean, we still have AFL players coming back.
Yeah,
to play for their club and play for their county when they get the opportunity.
For a few weeks, and then they go back to the warm sun and the glistening sea and the fresh fruit and the.
But you wouldn't really need them. You wouldn't really need them in
the affordable accommodation
for.
I don't know about
that. Why do they need to live in Ireland for that to work? Like, if they can go over to Australia, have that professional environment, train,
just come back here for.
And come back for the season and then...
Yeah.
Then they're missing club championship. I spoke to Bahia Mackin last week. She said she hasn't played club championship in Armagh in the last 5 years because she's been over there, and that was one of her real draws to come over. So there's never going to be a total win, but if we can figure out a way of keeping the top talent here and getting them to play championship, it'd be incredible. But one like complaint I'd have would be the AFLW seems to be growing, which is great, but it's almost growing too quickly. Like, the standard of the games, it's not brilliant. You know, they're quite scrappy. And again, that's because a lot of these players haven't been playing this game for longer than 5 years. So they're also not in great financial... Their finances aren't great over there. So you think that instead of trying to expand to Tasmania and then bring this other entire new entity in, that they might just work on what they have and build that from the ground up.
I'd be fascinated to see what the logistics behind it would be, because in that video for on that clip that wasn't in what we played, they like reference like Celtic, the football club, and they reference like the Boston Celtics as well as like these Irish kind of diaspora type organizations and sporting clubs and or whatever. And obviously Celtic don't play with players who are just of an Irish background. I mean,
so. You mean legally? I mean, we were like, obviously, you can't just say we're only going to pick Irish
players. Yeah, it's like Athletic Bilbao.
Yeah,
like they
try your best.
They do their best. Like, yeah, they do all the Basque stuff, but then like, you know, their Edin Terzic is their new manager, so it's, you know, it's
needs must.
Yeah, exactly. But I'd just be interested to see what it looks like if they do go and do it, and I would imagine that would take an awful long time. So I'd say it probably is a couple of years down the line. But actually, your suggestion there of the LGFA getting involved in this and having it as some sort of bargaining chip, I'd be all for that. That'd be
some amazing. Randos having ideas in Australia, and suddenly a massive opportunity falls in your lap. Let's wait and see if they're prepared to take it. AFL, as of 2026, AFLW players are paid under a tiered structure, with the average salary projected to reach roughly 70,000 to 82,000 Australian dollars. By next year, top tier players, tier one players in 2024 earned a base of over $95,000. Sorry. What's the Australian dollar?
Yeah, it sounds fine. The general average wage out there is about $70,000 to $90,000. So you're talking similar enough to Irish levels in terms of that's about 45, 50, 55K a year, euro wise.
Yeah. And obviously, it's a 6 month season.
Yeah. And they've got like, a lot of those expenses are probably looked after as well.
Yeah, food and travel, and a lot of the teams would pay for their accommodation as well. So
yeah, and a lot of them work just a couple of hours. Like, I think a lot of them are baristas as well, just to fill the days, you know, and get more embedded in the community. So it's
amazing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the Irish players are in those top bands as well. It's not like they're coming in at the bottom and all the Aussies are at the top.
Elite players can earn over $260,000 per season when combining base salary with promotional and marketing payments, it says here. I don't know. I think like there's obviously going to be a backlash from people going,
taking a player.
Why would we give the fox in the hen house? Why would we build him a gaff in the hen house? The other side of it is like, why not take some opportunity to have an Irish team and see where it takes us?
Yeah, it would all come down to calendar. And I don't know if it would work. Like,
well, obviously the calendar as it expands is getting more and more difficult for them.
Yeah, because it was fine at the start. They could play the full thing, and then they extended their preseason to start in May last year. So that's when we saw a lot of the drop-off, and even more of a drop-off this year, especially when teams are trying to come over and you've got a lot of debutants. You don't want to be rocking in a couple of months later.
The only thing is if you owned the team, you'd be saying, that's grand. Here's your preseason. Here's the stuff that you need to be doing for your county. Now, it would obviously dilute the championship here, where one county has 10 players coming back on the full strength and conditioning program of a professional athlete, coming back to play county and then going away again. But if that was Kildare, I wouldn't care.
Yeah, if you look at Mayo, if Mayo right now had the football team that, if they had all the talent that were over there, they're probably one of the most ravaged counties. They take it now. It's interesting. It could be, like I said, it could work really, really well, or it'd be an absolute disaster. I don't think there'll be anything in the middle.
Okay, so that is that. Give us your views on that. 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Tonight, Charlie McConnell, the Minister with Responsibility for Culture, Communication and Sport, is going to be, I think, in studio with Owen Shane tonight. Owen has made a call out for you to get involved in this. Have a look.
So tomorrow night in Off the Ball, we're going to have Charlie McConnell on the show, who's the Minister of State with responsibility for sport. Now, he's going to be chatting to us about the Community Sports Facilities Fund, which was known as the sports programme in the past. There's huge amounts of money that is given towards this fund. It was 277 million euro in 2023, for example. So if you've got any questions that you want us to put to the minister, you can fire them into the comment box and we'll try and get through as many of them as possible tomorrow evening, particularly if you've got your own projects going on. There was over 3,000 projects funded in 2023. So plenty of you out there, no doubt, are trying to go through the process, which can be painstaking enough, of trying to get some of this funding for your sports club. So get in touch tomorrow evening on Off the Ball. We'll have Charlie McConnell with us in studio.
So I obviously posted that on Instagram. You can also get us on WhatsApp, 0879 180 180. That's 0879 180 180, and they will put your questions to the minister in studio tonight. We've gone on long enough here. What is it? We're 30 odd minutes into the show and we haven't delivered the biggest sports news. The earthquake that went off in Westmeath football yesterday, which they all heard about during the power rankings. Have a look at this. Oh.
Former Westmeath captain John Heslin has rejoined their panel ahead of the Leinster final against Dublin.
Wow.
John Heslin, who was the co-commentator for Westmeath's last match 2 weeks
Sensational.
Ago.
Sensational.
Wow, that is exciting. That's added a whole other dimension to this thing for me anyway, on a personal level.
But Tommy, John Heslin is like, he's a bit, Matthew's saying he's still like absolutely killing that club level. He's also like 34, which if you take it as a, especially at a county that wouldn't have like the absolute glut of footballers to pick from, like it's not maybe anybody outside Kerry really. Like, 34 is not so, like, you can't give up on, if he's willing to play, he's going to add a massive amount still to them. It's not like, he's definitely not past it, you know?
No, he's 33, by the way.
Is he 33? Okay, well, there you
he's
go.
Not 34 till the middle of the summer, and by stage, they might be in an All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah.
So,
and he's 33 till he's 34, Tommy, like, you know, as we know.
And look at, lads, age is no barrier to kicking two-pointers either. And absolutely. John Heslin is a man that could kick two-pointers in his sleep, I'm sure. Jeez, that is just fantastic. And look at, can I rejig the power rankings? Because John Heslin's return might just shoot them a little higher.
Yeah, he should have. Did he move them up?
No, not live, no. No, he didn't. He brought it back up later on, but he didn't move them up. They're still behind down.
Next week, don't worry, they will be.
They had a Kildare, though.
I'm sure they are. Yeah. They beat them.
Yeah.
Add in John Heslin to the mix, and suddenly they're 5-point favourites next time they play Kildare.
Yeah, it is. It's some story. It is, like, it is. And it's one of them, when Luke Loughlin got injured, like, you'd kind of be talking around, and you're talking to your mates or whatever, and you're saying, geez, I wonder, would he give Heslin a call? Will he try to get Ronan O'Toole back, who's over in Australia, I think, in a minute? But and you're kind of like, pie in the sky, like, probably won't, like, whatever. But he clearly has, and he's going to be involved in some way on Sunday by the sounds of it. Whether he gets on or not, I don't know. Like, I mean, he's been playing club football for the last, well, he obviously left the Westmeath panel in 24, I think, so he hasn't actually played an inter-county game under the new rules, which seems like a shame considering the level
of
football.
He'd be playing club form,
but he wouldn't have played an inter-county game. He would have been playing with Lomans. They didn't go too well in the championship last year for their own standards. They always tend to be in around the final, but I heard a couple of weeks ago he's playing a club game, and he kicked a serious amount of scores, and we know he's capable of doing that. So it's going to add a totally different dynamic to it. I think there's probably going to be, I've seen some people talking about it, and obviously the general sense is excitement, because this is just exciting by the nature of it, regardless of whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing. And there has been some talk about,
well, there's at least three games left in their season.
But
no,
that's the other side of it, and that's the thing that's sort of being forgotten with it. Now, I don't think he's going to be, I can't imagine he's being brought in to be like, right, we're going to throw in for Cavan. I think like he'd been brought in to give us something if we needed towards the end of the game against Dublin, but also then
hear me out.
Go for it.
Why not start him? I know that there's this whole the sanctity of the group and everything, but the way you feel excited about it, I have no doubt the rest of the change room was like, oh my God, we got our superstar back. And as Tommy points out, he's the age of Jesus Christ. He's 33.
Yeah.
Messiah's back.
Yeah, and I would agree with you on the point of the sanctity of the changing room, because that's already kind of been put to the side because he's been brought back in and that he hasn't been there at all over the course of the last 6 or 7 or 8 months.
Yeah.
And
the reason to start him would be that he doesn't have much football at this level, and you get 35, 40 minutes out of him, and then the next day against Cavan, if you do need him to start, you can start him.
Would you not do the opposite and not start him, and then if you're trailing by... 6-8 points with 30 minutes to go, you bring on John Heslin with the wind
points.
And you got
Dubs.
2 point scorer right there.
And it's the Dubs and Croker.
I can see both sides of it. I think my natural kind of thought would be to bring him on later on in the game, and ideally you're in touch one way or another. You're a few points ahead, you're a few points behind. Ideally you're 30 points ahead and it doesn't really matter and you're bringing him on for an old swan song. That'll be ideal, but that's probably not going to happen.
The spread is 6 points.
Yeah, I like this. The odds are crazy. I don't know what the hell is going on there with those odds. Like,
do you think that's too close or too far?
No, like the spread. I know the spread is obviously there's a relationship between the spread and the odds. But I think Dublin are 7-1 on.
Yeah,
come on.
The spread should be 10 or 11 if you're 7-1 on.
Yeah,
I think under the new rules.
Yeah. I think that's mad. The spread is probably okay. 6 points is probably fine, but the odds are madness. Like,
I'd make Dublin 7 to 9 point favourites for this.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they beat Loud by 10, so that's fair enough. But Loud were absolutely atrocious, and
they
Dublin
were
pretty good. That's the best we've seen Dublin in the last little while. You know,
and Dublin back Croker, I think.
Yeah. There's also the other little intangible sort of things of it that we don't really know about, in that, like, what team are Dublin going to play? Are Dublin going to risk on? They've got to play Loud next weekend. Like, are they, I don't know. Like, I imagine they're probably saying, look, we'll go and win the Leinster Championship. They might know, maybe in their own heads, that the All-Ireland might be just out of reach for the stage of this process or cycle that they're in, and they want to make sure that they at least come away with something. And it would be a pretty big disaster for them to lose to Westmeath and
Leinster
final. Like, let's call a spade, and it doesn't pay me at all to say that as a Westmeath man. I mean, I, you know, reality what it is here,
Division
you know, like it's Division 1 and Division 2,
yeah.
Division 3, yeah.
Do you think it's like really
they think of themselves
handy as well? The last week, all it was the news of Luke Loughlin,
yeah.
And there was nothing on Westmeath's performance. And now this week, all the talk is just going to be about Heslin. It's kind of taking... All the talk is about with me, but it's taking all of the talk away from their performance and the Dubs, and it's just putting it on a certain player that kind of actually, you know, with Luke Loughlin, you said that they put the news out there so that the players wouldn't have to be kind of dealing with these questions, and it's putting all the media attention on them, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure how intentional the Luke Loughlin would have been, but I could see about the news coming out and all that, but the Heslin one, I could see that being a part of the decision making to be like, yeah, people will find out about this and that will take away from what we're actually going to go and do in the game and all that sort of stuff. But at the same time, I think it's probably a case of Dublin aren't going to approach this game any differently, regardless of who Westmead put out there. But I think if you find yourself in touch, I do have a good feeling about the weekend. Now, I'll probably clip that up and someone come back to me on, well, I won't be here Monday, but I'll come back on Tuesday and throw it out my face. But they'll give him a rattle, I think. They'll definitely give him a rattle. And I'd be interested to see, and I don't know any of the insides in any of this. I can imagine, as you say, in my head, I'm thinking he's coming back in. This is a guy who's given outrageous service to the County of Westmeath for 15 years, had some good moments, Talent Cup wins, a couple of Division 3 titles, a couple of Leinster finals that didn't go his way. But all in all, hasn't had an unbelievable return for the standard footballer that he is, and for how many years he could have been playing for pretty much any county in the country.
Yeah, but and the thing is, if he's back now, he might be back for a couple of seasons.
It could be, yeah, you would know, yeah. And I imagine I know with work, his job, he'd just be abroad an awful lot, and he doesn't tend to be around, but that might change. You don't know people's personal circumstances or whatever. But I would say within the panel, it's a young enough panel there, there's lads there who would never have played with John Heslin, I say, and a couple of lads maybe had a season there with him towards the tail end when he'd said himself he wasn't actually in training all that much. He was coming back for games and all that sort of thing. So I would imagine the sentiment is pretty positive towards him coming back in, but I would just be intrigued to see if maybe there is a couple of people who are a little bit kind of...
There'd have to be, wouldn't
off
there?
By it. But I
think you're going to lose your place?
Yeah. No matter how
legendary he is.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I wouldn't
it's
say...
A challenge to the whole, there's no I in team.
And yeah.
There isn't John Heslin.
For the greater good.
Yeah, there isn't John Heslin. I think Mark McHugh would have factored that in. And if Mark McHugh felt as though the lads who are there could have contributed in the same way that he thinks John Heslin will, he wouldn't have called him back in. So he obviously thinks that there's a gap that could do a plug in there.
Yeah,
and I don't think this would have happened if Luke Loughlin wasn't injured. I don't think it would have.
Is there any world where he doesn't play any part at all?
Yeah, sure, definitely. There's definitely a world, yeah. He'll be in the panel, I assume. But there's a world where he doesn't get on, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Darrell Shea is saying that Dublin have a problem with kickouts and a problem with midfield in his piece in the Irish Times today. And he also thinks McGeaney is lying to the public when he's talking about it being pure piggery. And certainly the evidence of Armagh's kickouts being so sensational would suggest that there's something in what Darrell Shea is saying. I keep hearing this stuff about kickouts being a total lottery under the new rules. I really don't buy it. The big giveaway was McGeaney called it pure piggery and everybody grabbed a hold of it as if this was proof that there's nothing to be done about kickouts except throw your hands in the air and hope for the best. I know McGeaney a long time and he's a smart fella. My feeling on it would be that if McGeaney wants everyone in the outside world to think the kickouts are all down to potluck, he's telling a different story inside the dressing room and then points out that Blaine Hughes, 20 out of 21, and how the Dubs would give for that this weekend. But is there any world in which Heslin is like a kickout option?
I would think that the main... Well, he absolutely would be a kickout option for sure. Like, he's unbelievable in the air, but...
So you bring him out for all their kickouts and then the rest of his game is in around the...
I think one of the reasons will be that come towards the end of a game, John Heslin is, despite missing a very important one against Tyrone a couple of years ago, his free-taking ability is pretty much second to none. And Westmead's free-taking against Kildare was not second to none, obviously Luke Loughlin not being there and him being one of the options. And Sam McCartan did kick some big ones out of his hands, but he's kicking from the ground. He dropped two out wide and that was... that's something. I mean, there's two or three free points there for you if you can just ping them over, and John Heslin will be well able to do that. So I would say that's more where they're looking at it, I would imagine. But absolutely, a kick out. You need kick out options for sure. And Westmead have some big men and some men who are well able to win ball in the air. But as you say, John Heslin in around a bit of piggery, I think he'd do all right for himself, you know. But yeah. I do think McGeaney is I think that's bang on. Darrell's just bang on what he's saying there. Coming out and saying, sure, it doesn't matter, what can you do? Sure, you just have to boot it out there and see what happens. And sure, then 2 weeks later, it's the best kick-out performance we've seen since the new rules have come in.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody believed him.
No, not at all.
But there is a lot of piggery going on. You're seeing people take the opportunity to poke the head off their...
Yeah, it's not that,
which isn't great, you'd have to say.
Yeah.
Pictures of Rory McIlroy everywhere in the back of the Indo with his shoes off. He's gone up a shoe size because in the bath last night, the blister under his toe got so bad that he ripped the toenail off.
Mm.
Good preparation to try and win a major.
Did he just rip it in frustration? He was like, this blister's doing my head in, or did it...
It seemed to be there's no other way to deal with the situation.
That is a grim thought.
Wild, man. That like a professional athlete of, you know, that standard is reduced to something you might do after a football match yourself.
Yeah.
You know, surely he's got a doctor on call to say, is there a sterile way we can do this? Is this the best course of action instead of just go on ham at it?
Tear it off. You have to get rid of it before it grows back. That's part of the logic Rory's using here. And I know that from experience.
Have to get rid of what?
The toenail. If your toenail is broken and slightly hanging off, you need to tear it off from the point of the rip, and it will grow back properly. Then, if you don't do it, it'll start growing
in bits
while it's also split.
So you have like a mutant toenail.
Yeah, so there's a chance for the nail to dig in to your toe and get, you know, cause a lot of pain. So
I hope everybody's enjoying their overnight oats while they're.
I'm not usually bad with this sort of stuff, but I'm recoiling here. Like,
my toes are gripping the bottom of my socks here for dear life.
Can we move on?
So Rory has obviously moved on from all the live chat. He was taking a subtle enough lap of honour. It was like, well, I knew about this back in March. And he was asked about it. He's like, oh, I love talking about this. And then he did talk about it. He was obviously happy enough. John Ram was also doing press yesterday and was asked. And it fronted up and seems to have answered all the questions that was asked him, except what did he learn from the experience. No regrets. They were asking, are you going to be able to get out of your contract? And he's like, it doesn't look like it. Oh, it's fairly watertight. Unless, of course, there is no live next year, which is also a possibility, that it just goes pop totally and then all their contracts get released, in which case he'd be able to go back. But which I think is probably the most likely outcome. I'd be very surprised if another billionaire came in and decided out of vanity to throw bad money after bad money.
No.
But he was asked what he learned. He went, well, that's for me to know, isn't it? Essentially. He was like, well, I'm not telling you. What did you learn? Maybe don't just follow the money. When, like, Ram's reputation was never higher than when he went to live. So it's going to be really interesting this week. There's loads of good coverage today in the papers. If you haven't quite had your appetite whetted, Rory doing the press on the week of a major is always worth tuning in for.
It's a weird major as well, because it's not usually at this time of year, and we kind of have to get used to it being stuck in the middle of all the other big sporting stories that are going on. And if it wasn't forgotten about at the end of the year, it's certainly not going to be at the front of our minds this year. But the Rav stuff was interesting as well, because although he did front up to his part of it, he also said that it's up to the people in charge of Liv to fix any issues. So he's also like, well, you know, they created this mess, so it's up to them, even though I played a role in that mess. You know, it's not my responsibility to fix it. And it's not. It's not, to be fair. So I'm interested to see how he plays. I think he'll be front and centre of most golf fans' minds this week. First major after rejoining the DP World Tour as well, obviously. So
he's paid his fines, hasn't quite rejoined it.
Or rejoining later this year.
He'll be able to...
Committed to rejoining the DP World Tour.
Play in their tournaments. I mean, does this mean he's come to the Irish Open? It may well do. I haven't actually seen how those dates work out just yet, but obviously the Irish Open really benefited from this last year when Brooks Koepka... Did Patrick Reed show up last year? Was that as well?
Yeah, I think you're right. That rings a bell, yeah. Brooks Koepka was definitely there anyway.
The other big thing happening today, of course, is Celtic and Motherwell tonight at 8 o'clock. Martin O'Neill insists that Hearts are still the favourites to win the title. They're not with the bookmakers.
It all depends on tonight.
I would be all depends on so disappointed if we didn't get to the
final day.
And it'd be a case of, I don't want it to be a case of, just out for pure entertainment value, that Celtic only need to draw. I don't want that. Is that possible? Is there a world where Celtic don't need to win against Hearts?
Yeah, so Celtic are one point behind. So if Hearts lost tonight and Celtic won, Celtic would go 2 points.
That's the one thing I don't want to happen. I don't want to be going in and Celtic just needing a draw at home. That would be a bit of an anticlimax to the end of the season, although the game could end up in such a way that still becomes entertaining. I want Hearts to be going there just battening down the hatches, trying to just get,
so that's a 90
get over the line. Yeah, I'd love that.
There was a lovely sense of drama coming up to these games, because the Sky Sports had already committed to showing the Falkirk Hearts game.
Tonight.
They weren't going to show the Celtic game tonight at all. And Motherwell actually put a pay-per-view on their Motherwell TV that could public access, that you could pay 15 quid and... Obviously, loads of people signed up. I'd say it was probably worth a couple of hundred grand to Motherwell for tonight. Then Sky Sports came in and were like, actually, we're going to show it. And look, fair play to Motherwell. They actually refunded people their money.
All right.
They signed up, which is...
They seem like a good club, Motherwell.
They are, like, out of all the clubs in Scotland, they're very community-based. They're very well-run in that aspect. And they're fairly sound skins as well. So hoping they do.
That is an outrageously honourable thing to do, to give the money back.
Considering the amount of money that... you know, they would have made from it, and the lack of money they have in general at the best of times, it was...
Are they still going to show the game themselves?
They'll still show it internally for the people who signed up to Motherwell TV, but the internal club's broadcasts, you know, they don't always have that open to the public, so...
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I think this... an exciting opportunity to be able to be involved in a franchise league in this part of the world, in the continent of Europe, in Ireland.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.